And so ensued the longest pee break of all time. This is a continuation from the last episode. As I was editing this episode, I realized it was a little long, so I wanted to break it up. There's going to be another disclosure later on in the episode because we had some bad internet. But either way, you know, the second half of this episode, it's still good, still listen to it. Wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be. But you know, sometimes the odds are stacked against you a little bit, but either way, we have some good 2001 discussion for you, and I hope you enjoy it. And we're back. Does everyone feel better? I feel better. I feel a lot better. So just in case you guys, forgot what we were talking about, which it's going to be a seamless transition, so I don't know how you could forget what we were talking about. I'm only saying this because I totally forgot what we were talking about, and I have new stuff I want to say. So here's the best.
I totally hope you put a blank screen up there that said intermission.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a good idea. I might even do that. That's what we're talking about, intermissions. So really, you know, I feel like this is the first half of this movie really is just build up an exposition, and then right after the intermission is really the climax of the movie. Which we know, Frank gets, man, his ass gets launched in space.
Oh, man.
I felt so bad for him, honestly. Like, whenever Dave is just looking at the, you know, the monitor, and then you just see Frank, he's like, shmee!
Dude, I laughed so hard. I was like, oh! Yeah,
it was, like, poor guy. And he's like, grabbing his, he's like looking for his air tube. He's like,
insert TIE fighter sound.
Yeah, it was great. Well, what's scary about that scene is you see after he's out of the pod there, you see the arms or the hands open up, and then it just zooms in on Hal, and then we have confirmation. Okay, Hal is a tool, you know, basically.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny, actually, now that I think about it. Hal is a tool. And what's funny about Hal is he's supposed to be this perfect computer, doesn't make any mistakes, whatever. And, you know, this is kind of where the age-old dilemma that a lot of people have with movies like this or ideas like this is technology is taking over. You know, Skynet, this is where Skynet comes from, everybody. Terminator reference, for those of you who don't know. And let's just get it out there. Is AI ever going to take over? Yes or no?
Yes, it is. The problem that is portrayed here, though, is that Hal was given conflicting instructions. And you don't really learn that here in 2001, but in the subsequent novels, you do. Hal was given an impossible puzzle to figure. And he couldn't find the balance because he's an AI.
Yeah.
And I like Hal's portrayal here because, yes, he's an AI and he's very smart and he's capable of running the ship and monitoring and doing all of these things and having a chess game with Gary Lockwood, which I thought was awesome. I love that scene. But he's capable of doing all these things, but he's still a computer and he's still kind of dumb. And I like the 60s portrayal of AI far better than the subsequent versions, which is actually probably going to be our reality if things keep going the way they go.
Well,
sorry if that's too short an answer for you.
No, that's perfect. What do you think, Mikey? You think AI is taking over?
I don't know if it's AI that's taking over. I think it's the misuse of technology through human hands that is taking over, in my opinion. But I also don't know that much about technology as it is now. But just from an outside perspective, like, that's what it seems like, just the misuse of people's power over technology.
Do about 30 minutes of research on the internet and you
really
will be scared poopless.
Really?
About AI.
Eesh.
And where it's going right now.
I don't want to now.
Yeah. I, you know, a few years ago, you know, for the past 10 plus year, you know, 10-ish years, we've been seeing more and more videos, more and more scenarios popping up of, you know, self-sufficient robots. Most of the stuff that you are making is automated, or most of the stuff that you're consuming is being made by something that's automated, autonomous.
This microphone.
Yeah. I mean, there's things that are, it's robots. Robots and AI are basically what is doing it. So yeah, in a way, I don't know if they're going to be murderous technology, but yeah, no, I think AI has already taken over in a lot of ways, and is going to continue. Now, as far as like establishing a culture for itself or whatever, you know, and like a clan of sorts, I don't think that's going to happen, really. You know what I mean? But no, I think in a lot of ways, man is shot itself in their foot by making technology so advanced and trying to make technology think for itself. Because now we have... go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, what's really frightening is that, you know, we're sitting here having this conversation. The AI is laughing at us because we're already locked into the Matrix. We just don't realize it yet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Very good. I see it. I see the code. There is kind of an interesting question posed, you know, and I think this is something that, how weird would it be if we saw some sort of like artificial intelligence rights activists coming out saying machines have feelings, you know what I mean, like throwing that in our face. There is kind of a question posed of like, do machines have feelings? The answer is obviously no, but Hal makes a pretty good case for himself, and he does a pretty good job of conveying emotion in an emotionless way. I find it hilarious that as soon as we start talking about the AI's feelings, my Zoom decides to quit working. So they're listening. They're out there. I'm sorry. Technology gods, please don't interrupt our Zoom meeting again. So,
okay, Dave.
Yeah. We obviously know machines don't have feelings, but when Hal is begging for his life, he does a pretty good job of convincing us that he might have some emotions because he's so monotone. It's just so weird. It is such a weird feeling as a real human being to listen to that now. Go ahead, Ethan.
Well, I was going to say, I had a thought on it. It's wonderful how the voice actor has no inflection in his voice. So yeah, it's very monotone, very dry sounding. But the fact that he's pleading, don't do this. Please stop. Please stop. You know, it's just... Yeah, it's one of those things that we see portrayed in a lot of TV and film where AI is concerned. It's like in Star Trek The Next Generation, Data doesn't have emotions, and yet he's completely emotional in every episode where he's featured. And it's because of he's motivated. And I feel like that's where where we can infer emotion here is Hal 9000 is motivated by the mission and wants to complete the mission. And it's very imperative that he complete that mission. And so, yeah, he's, you know, he doesn't want to be shut down.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And really, the scene that, which was on your top five, you know, blockbuster moments, the scene where Dave is unlocking all of the terminals and slowly pulling out all of what makes Hal Hal. It is a pretty chilling scene because it seems like it drags on way longer than it needs to. But you think about he's killing somebody, you know, and it makes it feel like he's killing somebody. And I don't know. I think it's go ahead.
And not only is he killing the only other intelligence out there with him. That's it. It's just Bowman from that point forward,
mm-hmm.
You know, 18 months from Earth. Millions of miles away from the nearest human being or living person.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, I mean, he's literally cutting himself off from every other intelligence around him.
Yeah.
And totally. Yeah, that's a hard decision to make.
Yeah. Which kind of goes to show like the intelligence that Kubrick apparently thinks that humans have. And did you notice how most of the character interactions within this movie is actually pretty monotone? It's almost like, man has been man has been desensitized by technology. Another way that man has shot themselves in the foot. Mikey, did you have a question? Something you wanted to say? Go for it.
Yeah, about the millions of miles from other people. Did Hal kill everybody in cryo sleep, or was it? I thought it just made it look like it was one monitor. Was that everybody?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's one scene you might have missed it there where it's all three names. and they're all going flatline.
Okay. Yeah, that makes more sense, because I was just like, why would he just kill one person? That makes no sense. That makes so much more sense.
I insulted me before they put him on the ship.
Yeah. Okay.
He's like,
cool, gotcha.
It's yeah, almost like you're saying
I'll save my questions. I have another question about that.
Yeah, he's like, that will show them. Killing one of their friends, you know what I mean? That was my best Hal impression. Whatever. Mike, I want to hear your question.
Okay. Well, it's another thing about the cryo people. It made it sound like they kidnapped them. Like they didn't know that they were on that mission. That's what I got from it. Because they were like, yeah, they were in basic training and they went into cryo before they were ever even put on the ship. So I was like, so did they know they were even going to fly, or are they just, what's going on? But that's just, I might have missed something too, but that's just what I got out of that when they were talking about how they got there.
Well, I think you kind of missed a little bit of the, I don't know that they expressly said it. They were trained separately.
Yeah, that's what they said. So I was just like, right. Do they know that where they're going, or?
They did know where they were going.
Okay.
And they put them on silent. Bowman and Poole did not know the mission parameters. They didn't know what they were going out to see. Those guys in cryosleep did.
Yeah.
And they had a very specific agenda once they got there.
Oh, hence the message when he's okay. Gotcha.
And Hal knew what that agenda was too. And it conflicted with the stated purpose that Bowman and Poole knew about. They were just going out to explore.
Oh.
But there was an ulterior motive at play as well, and Hal couldn't deal with it.
Okay.
I missed that totally. I did not realize that they didn't know what they were going out there for. So that makes a lot of sense then. So it's like basically Hal being dumb, a dumb computer, trying to go against protocol. He's like, what's the best thing to do? Well, I know, you know, yeah. So he was trying to do the right thing. But if you're not paying super duper close attention, it can be interpreted as he's a psycho.
Well, and he does the right thing there at the end. As Bowman is killing him, the last thing, the way I take it, the last thing that he does before he goes offline is he puts that video up there that's embedded in his circuits. He knew what the agenda was, and now he's letting Bowman know what that agenda was as well. He's not hiding that anymore.
Yeah,
okay. I took that as like a short circuit, but that makes a lot more sense though, because he was like, if I have to do something, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. This is why I killed everyone else.
Yeah.
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 That's interesting.
I, we could obviously, there's so many things that we could talk about with this movie, and I think it might be good to kind of naturally usher along, you know, towards the end of this movie, because there's still a lot to talk about. You know, the whole monolith sequence where Dave finds the monolith, you know, or the monolith finds Dave, I guess. How did you guys take that scene? Did you take that as the monolith is actually seeking out Dave, or did you take that as Dave has come across this thing and now he's brought it into the ship? And I mean, what does the book say? So, I mean, what do you guys think? Ethan, you go first.
Well, just are you talking about the one in orbit of Jupiter?
Yes.
Okay. Man was supposed to get to it. And if man could get to it, then the gate was going to open and it was going to usher whatever being.
Hey there. So around this time is whenever we had some serious interference from the weather. So we are going to resume pretty much right after I stop talking. And you'll know exactly what happened. So, anyways, just wanted to let you know. It was on our end. We kind of had a mess up, but it is what it is. So, thank you for listening. And welcome back to the Wannabe Critic. I am your host, Gabriel Fast. As you just heard, you know, we kind of had some interference, but a couple of days later and some clear weather, I am rejoined with both of my cohorts here, Mikey Collins and Ethan Maestri of Age of Geek. Guys, how are we feeling tonight?
Present and accounted for.
That's so funny. Man, Zoom is a different kind of beast, and it's, you know, it's helpful for sure to be able to, you know, see you guys. And it's nice that we have the, you know, the ability to be able to do this, but unfortunately, technology is not perfect. And it was kind of hilarious that as we're discussing the, you know, artificial intelligence portion of the show kind of started coming in more to the, you know, front. It's kind of funny that the technology quit working, you know, because you guys, I think, were probably fine. But my internet setup
is sorry,
just...
Dave. Yeah. I'm sorry, Gabe, but you can no longer have your podcast.
Yeah, no kidding. The end has come for you, Gabe. Gabe, stop. You don't. Anyways, so we were talking about, you know, kind of wrapping up our discussion here, kind of talking about, you know, the thing that Ethan said. He said that man was supposed to find the monolith. He was supposed to, you know, once he got to that point in technology, or that, you know, to that point in their life where they could understand it and access it, then the gateway would be opened. And then, of course, once he finds the monolith, we get sent through the Willy Wonka hallway of trippiness of LSD.
The ultimate LSD trip.
Yes, exactly. And Mikey made a really good point kind of earlier on in the podcast. That's a long scene. It's like it's like 10 minutes.
Well, it's and the reason for that, I had mentioned earlier on in the podcast about Douglas Trumbull coming on as one of the effects, the key effects guys. And he developed kind of this sequence is one of the big things that he worked on and developed. And the way they shot it, the way it's rotoscoped, it was huge. It was something that had not been seen before. And so, you know, obviously Kubrick, you know, wanted to kind of showcase that for as long as he possibly could. And so it's a journey through an interdimensional gate. So
yeah,
who knows what that's actually supposed to look like if it even really exists. And so this kind of coming out of the 60s, the LSD, that's the thing you can point your finger at and make fun of. But in my mind, I look at it now in 2020 and it's still kind of cool.
Oh,
you know, yeah, it's trippy. Yeah, it goes a little bit long. But man, if I was a spaceman around Jupiter and suddenly dropped into an interdimensional gate, yeah, this might be the thing that I would see. I can definitely retcon that in my mind.
Yeah. Mikey, what do you think?
What was the question?
I don't know. Just say something about what Maestri was saying, because He kind of touched on it.
Well, you know what I was thinking about the whole time he was talking about, like, how he created that style? You know what that whole scene reminded me of?
What?
Dormammu, I have come for you. That whole Doctor Strange scene when he's, like, going, like, when he starts going through all the dimensions and, like, discovers, like, oh, my gosh, there's all these dimensions. He's, like, getting sucked in and out, like, different time warps and dimensions and stuff like that. That's what I was like, oh, so that's where they got that from. But it was so trippy. I am still so confused on the end and what all that meant.
Yeah.
But I can appreciate, especially, what was this, 68 was when it was made?
Yeah, 68.
Like, to have all that, I mean, it looked, this is not a, I don't want to say anything bad about this movie. It's not, I don't think this is a bad Xbox 360 when you played music background and it looked like a 70s disco party type thing.
Oh yeah.
That's what it reminded me of. And it kind of looked like that, but I was just like, for them to do that back then and make it look that good is really impressive. And it's, you can totally see how many movies and people have drawn from that.
Yeah. And that's the thing you have to remember is that was not CGI. That was completely animated cells, and just the way it was backlit and the way the camera work was done with it to rotoscope it. It was ingenious for its day. And yeah, really? Maybe it doesn't hold up to today's standards. And maybe it was edited a little bit long. But it's a cinematic moment that is going to influence a lot of people that come after it.
Yeah. I agree with that. And honestly, like...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It comes down to also, Mikey, like, I would... we come to the end of this conversation, it's kind of like, no one is saying that you have to love this movie. But...
That's very true.
But... That's true. No one's saying you have to love this movie, but we are saying that you need to see it. Because It's kind of like, for me, I don't like Green Day. I hate Green Day. But a lot of people who are making music these days, you know, and potentially bands that I really like, they probably grew up listening to Green Day and were inspired by the things that Green Day did. And it's a very similar thing where a lot of these movies that we're seeing nowadays, especially, I mean, take that whole interdimensional scene. Interstellar totally ripped that right out of that movie and threw it in Interstellar. I mean, it is a, to me, it's like a reimagining. It's like Nolan came to, you know, his brother and was like, okay, you remember that scene in 2001? Okay, let's make it like modern and cool.
Like, and not an LSD trip.
Yes, exactly. Like, let's make it believable, you know? And to me, it's like, is it edited long? Yeah, but just go back to what Ethan says. That's not really computer generated anything. That is a tangible effect, practical use of effects, and just sheer imagination. And who knows how long it took them to actually get it to work. You know, they kept throwing things, and I would love to know how long it took the effects guys, you know, to sit down and be like, yeah, like, yes, this is exactly what I want. Like, yes, this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But kind of, you know, pushing past that, we come to what is one of the most strangest and yet profound endings of all time, in my opinion. And, you know, this is what Mikey has been saying, you know, the past couple of days. He's like, I just don't understand. Maybe you guys can shed some light, blah, blah, blah. And I think, yeah, exactly. So we know Dave finds himself, basically, his life is flashing before his eyes at the end of this movie. What is left of his life is flashing before his eyes. And at the end of his life, he's visited by the monolith once again. And we get a cut to the monolith, then we get a cut to him as a baby in the womb. Now, and then he's overseeing the universe, and he has become a higher power at this point. You know, let's just do this. Let's go around the room, and I want each of us to kind of give our interpretation of what the ending really means. Because in my mind, somebody doesn't make an ending like this. At first glance, it can be kind of like, yeah, it's not supposed to make sense because we're not really supposed to understand a higher power, you know, to a personal degree, really. Or not a personal degree, but just know a higher power inside and out, or how it works, or how it's supposed to make sense. And I think that the ending of this movie kind of purposefully makes you scratch your head and try and get whatever you can out of it. So I want to save mine for last. Mikey, I want to know what your first, like, reaction, the things that have been going through your head the past couple of days. I want to know what you get out of the ending, and then Ethan and I will elaborate on what our opinion is of the ending of the movie.
Okay. Well, I don't want to okay, it does vary lines, but it raises questions, which I feel like, when I think, the more I think about it, I feel like is the point. Like, they want you to not question the film, but question what's going on or why that is happening, because you feel like an outsider watching an inside story, that they don't give you any hints of what's going on the entire time. And I like that, but it's also really irritating when you're trying to, like, I don't want to say review a movie, but absorb it and try to mull it over. But I guess in a way, though, that makes it even more so. You think about it even more rather than just one time, because it's been racking around my brain just that last 10 minutes of when he's young, and then he sees himself, and then he goes into a older man, and then he switches to a oldest man, and then he's a baby in a uterus floating through space. And I was just like, what?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like I need to watch it like 100 more times in order to catch things that I missed. But
yeah. And I think,
yeah, that's just where we're at right now too. So
yeah. When Sorry. I think, no, it's okay. I think too, the thing that's focused on the entire movie, and we'll get to you in a minute, Ethan. This thing is put in front of us the entire movie of like, what is this? You know,
the monolith.
Yeah, the monolith. And what does the monolith mean? And at the end of the movie, we're still finding ourselves asking that question of, what is this supposed to be? You know, and to me, you know, the monolith is more of like, well, I'm going to wait. I want Ethan to go.
Mike, yeah, totally. I totally get where you're coming from. Hashtag no context, right? Is that what I'm kind of getting from your response there?
Yeah.
You broke up there at the as you got started into it. So
because
the first of it. But I hear you, and I get where you're coming from, because I was there as well. But I have the advantage of having read the novel now and watching the movie subsequent times and stitching the pieces together to where when I watch that segment now, it's a brilliant piece of artwork is what it is. Does it make perfect sense? No. It's like looking at a Picasso painting. You know, it's an abstract. It is ultimately what it comes down to. It's just an abstract. It doesn't give you any definite timeline. But what we're seeing is Bowman living out the last of his days. He's been transported through this gate. It's obviously had an effect on him physically, emotionally, mentally, so that when he shows up in that room with the spacesuit on, he's already aging. You know, we see that in the makeup.
Yeah.
So it's had the trip has had an effect on him. And then in my mind, that in living out the last of his days, that's accelerated. You know, he didn't spend 40 more years living there. His body was rapidly aging and progressing. And so you see him in those three scenes, those three vignettes, in which he is aging. He's coming to terms with that. The creators of this environment that he lives in gave him what he needs, but not everything that he needs. But that's fine. He's going to live out the last of his days. And then the monolith shows up and is going to take him through that final stage of his, quotes, evolution. And that's when he shows up as the space baby, because he has been transformed from a physical, corporeal human being. He's been transformed into whatever these things that created the monoliths. He's been advanced to that plane now. And he's going to live out the rest of his existence as a space being, as whatever these things advance to. And that's what the monolith does. That's the through thread of this whole movie, is they're there to facilitate humans' advancement as they gain knowledge and as they gain understanding. The monoliths are there to help them along, push them along to the next levels. And that's what we see Bowman go through. And ultimately, that's the meaning that I take out of Bowman's experience and all of that.
Yeah, that's well said. And I have a lot to elaborate, because I see it from a similar lens. I have a slightly different take. So, you know, basically throughout the entire movie, we have a natural progression or an evolution of sorts. You know, it's a pretty visual metaphor throughout the entire movie. Every time the monolith shows up, we have rapid progression and human advancement. And yes, he is inspiring. It's pretty obvious that the monolith is inspiring human advancement to get them to that next step. The end being becoming this being, the space being, right? So to me, we have this, you know, accelerated movement from the monkeys to the space, and then, you know, all of a sudden we're on our way to Jupiter. Now, whenever Dave finds himself in that room, I feel like it's in these moments that it's more than just a story. It's kind of like a reflection on humankind's psyche in a lot of ways. You're always trying to get to the next thing. You're always trying to find a way to advance. But if you get, go ahead.
I was going to say it's a reflection on the human condition.
Yes,
I feel like.
Exactly. Like just how humans are. You spend your whole life chasing after this thing or this idea, and before you know it, it may feel like just a few days, and then you're old all of a sudden. And that's kind of what I take out of it is, you know, I think it is pretty safe to say that there was an accelerated aging process that Dave was going through. However, if you didn't have any space wherewithal or any sort of, you know, mystic or dimensional hypothesis to speak of, you might be thinking as just a casual moviegoer, like, oh, wow, he spent 30 years there. But in a matter of minutes, we see him age 20 to 30 years. And what's funny is, you know, all these people that have advanced human technology, have advanced humankind, they all end up on their deathbed at some point, because whether that be, you know, an accident or maybe they get old, they do get old, and this thing that they've chased after, no doubt could eventually they realize what they've actually squandered their life on probably wasn't necessarily what they thought it was going to be and are still wanting more. To the point now, I think the movie does a really good job at the very end whenever Dave turns into a baby. It's like, okay, you've made it to the next step. You're the space being now. You're one of us. But guess what? You're a baby. You don't know.
You're on the bottom rung.
You don't know anything.
Yeah.
And yeah. To me, that's what I get out of it is you spent so hard. You spent so long trying to figure it out. You spent your entire life trying to figure it out, but whenever it all comes down to it, whenever you think you have it figured out, you actually come to realize you don't know anything. And, yeah,
and you're starting over.
And you're starting over. It's like freaking kindergarten to first grade to middle school to high school. And then once you're out of high school, you're a senior. You're like, oh, I got to figure it out. This is great. Then you get out into the real world and you realize, oh, crap, I'm an idiot. I don't know. I'm a baby, you know.
Not a babe, yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's people in their 60s and 70s that call 40-year-olds kids, mm-hmm. you know. And I don't know. I think this movie just does such a good job of kind of shedding light, like Ethan said, on the human condition. And I don't know. I think it's – it kind of goes back to the Star Wars thing. Whenever a – science fiction movie can make you reflect on humankind and life and people, I think it's a job well done. So
I think the brilliance of this movie at the end of it, whether you could talk about any one of the major three stories that we see portrayed on the screen, and you could go around this room right here and ask all three of us, what do you take away from this movie? And you're going to get three different answers, because this is a movie that at the end of the day does not have a hard and fast moral or meaning or message that's in it. It's you, each person. It's, well, like I said before, it's like looking at that Picasso painting, that abstract painting. Every one of us is going to take away something a little bit different. Maybe there's something that overlaps, a message that overlaps. But for the most part, it's very individual perspective that comes into play in trying to determine what this movie is trying to say. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah, same here. And Ethan, that's a really good, because you know, whenever you go to a museum and someone asks you, what do you see? Especially with an abstract. If you say, I don't see anything, what is that person who asked you the question, what are they going to tell you to do?
Keep looking at it.
Keep looking at it. Because eventually you're going to – and that's why I told Mikey a couple days ago whenever he asked. He's like, man, I just don't get it. I'm like, just keep thinking about it. Like, you know, and it is – it's a hard movie to watch, honestly. It's 2.5 hours long, and it feels like it's about 3.5 hours long. It's a very – it is a slog at times. It's – for the time period it was in, it would have been very exciting, you know, because it's like you said, we haven't seen it before. But I feel like – this is one of those rare movies where it actually is considered. I mean, it's art. It is art, and people have a message they want to get out or a story they want to tell. And nowadays, the movies we go see, they're so cookie cutter. Like, this is the ending. This is the clarity. Whatever. This movie, you have no clarity whatsoever. They're like, yeah, I don't know. If you ask Kubrick, like if Kubrick was sitting in on this conversation right now, he'd be like, I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about. You know, we just wanted to make a space movie. But we, you know what I mean? Like, who knows? But I love this movie. I think, like Ethan said, anyone can get something out of this movie that wasn't seen before, you know? And I love it to death. And I'm glad I was able to podcast about it with Mikey, who had never seen it before. And who knows, maybe in a couple of years we can watch it again. So,
did anything about this conversation help you out, Mikey?
Yeah. There's a lot. Yeah. I still have so many questions because it's like, it's a really long movie and there's so many little parts because I don't feel like we talked in depth about the other two parts as we have about this one. We still talked about them a lot, but I still have so many questions about even the monkey stuff. Some of that I have questions about.
Yeah.
But yeah, that helped me quite a bit because, yeah, to put, especially with knowing, because what I thought, I figured that his final stage was ebbed up because he was aged when he got there, but I didn't realize that he was sped up aged the entire time, and then that was a different form. I thought that they took it and switched him from being old and reverted him all the way back to being a baby. Yeah, I didn't realize that was a higher form, so that that makes a lot more sense than just being like, all right, you're a baby again.
yeah
but yeah, no, that helped.
And that's the great thing about this movie is that if you can watch this movie and then find a group of friends or somebody else that has an opinion about that movie and talk about it with them, this becomes a water cooler type movie where you can talk about, oh, that was a cool scene and whatnot. But then you can also get into some really deep discussions about, well, like we were talking about the human condition and whatnot. And that's kind of the beauty of this film, I think.
Agreed. Well said. So I would like to do something that's, you know, pretty traditional and feels out of place with a movie like this, but I want us to give this a score. You know, the official wannabe critic score.
I was not ready for this.
I know. Well, you better figure it out.
All right.
Ethan, you go first.
All right. I give it a 9 out of 10. I mean, I don't ever score 10 out of 10 for any movie. So for me to give this a 9, you know, let me revise that. Let me go 9.5. I'll go 9.5 out of 10. It's as close to, I'm not going to say it's a perfect movie. I won't do that because I'm sure there's probably listeners out there that have watched it that are probably thinking, what is this guy smoking? But 9.5 out of 10. Because it is as near to perfect movie as possible, because it is gorgeous, it is well shot, it is meaningful, and it gives you something to talk about and think about long after you have finished the 2.5 hours of the movie. And honestly, let's be honest, that is not something you get out of a whole lot out of modern cinema. And so I definitely, this is a classic, this is up on my wall. And it should be in any sci-fi geek's collection, honestly. 9.5 out of 10.
Well said. I agree. Mikey, what's your score?
Oh, man. I got 4 numbers in front of me right now. It's definitely not that one. It's probably not that one. Eesh. I'll probably give it that one. Okay, Ethan, don't hate me. Okay, so I'm rating this... not based off of, because I feel bad because I want to rate this off of, actually, no, I don't.
Before
I was going to say, I want to rate this off of.
Can I interrupt you?
Go ahead.
Mikey's having some serious technical difficulties.
That's fine. I want to ask him this before he gives his score. Mikey, are you a sci-fi fan?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, you're there.
Okay. Anyway, okay, yeah, definitely.
So you are a sci-fi fan. So what is your...
Very much so. I'd probably get this as 7.5. But that's... I feel like I could also rate it at a at most an 8.5, because I feel bad because I have so much to compare it to now. But when I compare it to those different sci-fi movies, you see everything that was drawn from this movie that I had no idea this my whole life that was drawn from this movie. So that makes me want to bump it up a score, because there's certain things like just the mysteriousness of the whole story. I don't think that's a word, but different things like that, that make me like it more. But if I had to give it a 100% rating, I'd probably give it a 7.5 right now, because there's just so much that I don't know about it, and it just confuses me.
That's great. It, leave your score right there. Here's your homework assignment.
All right.
Now, every subsequent sci-fi movie that you watch from here forward, think about the influence that 2001 has had on that movie, whether directly or indirectly. And then I'm going to ask you in a year or two, what's your score on 2001? Okay. And I will, if you have watched the movie again in that interim, I will almost guarantee you your score will go up. That's just my
opinion
on it. But 7.5 is still good.
I think I agree. I think that's a very, that's a good score. That's a really good score.
It was no means a bad movie at all, but it's just, I think from a, for a person that, cause even movies that I have seen, I could call out references to this movie as I was watching it. I was like, oh, that's, it's not sci-fi, but that's from Willy Wonka. They Willy Wonka ripped that scene off. And then like other certain things, I was just like, that's what they, okay. But yeah, so I already, that's what's already brought it up for me. Cause I was just like, that makes every reference I've ever seen to this movie makes so much more sense that I didn't even know it was a reference. But I'm sure, and I have a lot of sci-fi movies I've never even seen, so I'm sure there's even more than that I don't know about. But
well,
sorry,
said.
Gabe, I interrupted you.
No, it's okay. No, it's fine. It's good. It's great. You're the co-host, so you have a good say. So I think both of your guys' scores are really good. Where I stand with this movie is pretty much how I stand with it the first time I watched it 6 years ago. This is one of the greatest movies ever made. Period. It's not just one of my favorite sci-fi movies, it's one of my favorite movies. I gotta go 10 out of 10.
Wow.
Because there are so many things. The surface level stuff is there for people who want the surface level stuff. But the real meat, the endless conversation, I feel like we could talk about this. We've talked about this one movie. I feel like there's so much more to talk about. And it took 22 Marvel movies to get a discussion like this. You know, and it would take that amount of movies compared to a movie like this. And there's a lot of things inside those Marvel movies that without this movie, you don't have. A lot of sci-fi references. There's a lot of sci-fi references in video games that you don't have without this movie. There's probably a lot of things indirectly. Most George Lucas, I swear to God, whenever he was making Star Wars A New Hope, was probably thinking about this movie whenever he was working on it. Had to have been, because there was nothing else like it that had come along. You had 2001, and then there wasn't really anything else. So, in a way, you could say without 2001 and the visualization that it inspired, there's probably a lot of things in the early Star Wars movies that you don't get because 2001 isn't there. So,
and
go ahead.
Well, and think about the fact that in all of this movie, we don't have green-skinned aliens. We don't have pew-pew. We don't have all of the things that we have really come to accept as what makes modern sci-fi, right? This movie basically takes a very low level of action and, in my mind, makes it visually beautiful and presents a story about human beings and their advancement. And really, that's what all of sci-fi, from Star Trek all the way forward and through Star Wars and every other sci-fi genre and film that's come since then, at their core, if they tell a good human story, it ends up being a great sci-fi. And that's what 2001 is.
Well said. I completely agree. And I feel like there have been other people who have tried to be what 2000 was for movies. I think it's been tried many times. And there's just not anything else out there, really, like 2001, in my opinion, that does a similar thing. I mean, there's so much of the unknown that's sprinkled in this movie, whereas in most sci-fi, that's kind of the sin, is giving you a concrete answer. It's like, well, that's freaking boring. I don't really want that. You know, I want a sense of wonderment. You know, I want to play with my thoughts. 2001 gives that to you because you don't get an answer. You get the speculation that comes along with it. And I mean, I even think about, you know, I don't think you ever get a stale conversation out of this movie, whereas you can talk something like Star Wars to death, or even Star Trek, you can talk it to death. But there's so many things that come back around to the way humans view things that you can pull from this movie. And I don't know, I think it's one of the most, it's important for movies. And that's why I give it a 10 out of 10. I think it's I think it's a dime for sure. I don't think that we get a lot of the things that we have in love, I don't think we get had we not had 2001. So call me crazy, but I don't think I've ever given 10 out of 10 on anything that I've rated content wise ever.
I reserve mine for Star Wars, but that's more sentimentality than quality.
Well, you know, that's the thing, is this is not a sentimental thing for me, you know? I mean, it kind of is, but I think about 6 years ago, that was really around the time that I really started to look at things more critically. And I think I maybe have said this at the beginning of this show, but I mean, there's a handful of games and movies that I watched around this time, this 2016, 2017 period. So I guess it was like 5 or 6 years, like 4 or 5 years ago. Around that time is whenever I really started, that's kind of where the wannabe critic was kind of born, you know, was kind of building my own opinions and being outward with those opinions. And I think that 4-hour discussion that we had about 2001 the first time we watched it was heavily instrumental in that. So I was glad that we were able to revisit it, and now we can revisit it in another couple of years. So that's about all I have to say on 2001. Do you guys have any other comments that you want to make? I know Mikey has a lot of questions, but maybe we could save that for another episode sometime. But
I have one other observation.
Go ahead.
Zero-G toilets. I just want to say public restrooms now in Gravity are awful enough. I cannot imagine going into a public zero-G toilet in the future. No, no. Humanity is just too terrible for that.
Yeah, I'm out. No thanks. Well said. Mikey, do you have any concluding thoughts?
Watch this movie if you haven't seen it.
That's good.
And don't think about it too much your first watch through, because I think it'll make your brain hurt. But yeah, because kind of had to think about it a lot the first time I watched it. Yeah, definitely watch this movie for sure. Even if you hate it, because I can totally tell a lot of people that I know would probably hate it the first time I watch it, but they'd still probably have the same amount of questions we have about it. So I feel like even if you hated this movie and you still watched it, you could gain an appreciation for it over time, no matter your opinion on it the first watch through. So,
well said. That's good. Well, gentlemen, it's been a very nice ride. I was really happy with the way this conversation turned out. I'm kind of bummed we didn't get to put it on YouTube, but you know, it is what it is. I think this will make for good podcasting material. So, guys, I want to thank you very much for taking 2 nights out of your time, you know, to be able to sit down and talk about 2001 A Space Odyssey. And I was nice. I feel like we had three pieces of a puzzle kind of coming together. We had, you know, a little bit of naivety. I don't know if that's the right word.
Naivete.
You know, a little bit of you know. And then we had, you know, the more the old guy, and then we had the wannabe. So we had the three pieces needed for the puzzle. So listeners, thank you very much for listening to this episode. We really appreciate it. If you wouldn't mind, if you haven't given us a review on whatever platform you're listening on, it would mean a lot if you would. You know, it kind of helps us stay relevant or get us in front of other people. You can find us pretty much on any social media platform at The Wannabe Critic. I run all of our social media stuff there. I always say our because it's a group effort. It really is. You know, without the other people, it's really hard to have a show. So, but I run it. You know, I'm in charge of everything. So you'll basically be getting in touch with me. But just in case you do want to get in touch with Mikey or somebody else, Mikey, where can they find you?
Here.
Yep, there you go.
I think I
have. Mikey doesn't matter because he doesn't have social media because he's a naysayer, but that's okay. Ethan, where can they find you?
You can find me. I'm typically lurking around the geek underscore age hashtag, or not hashtag, handle on Twitter. That's my Age of Geek podcast. You can also find me on Andromeda Pod, at Andromeda Pod. That's our Twitter handle for the Drive Back the Night podcast. Give those two podcasts a listen if you haven't. We'd certainly appreciate it. We got various and sundry opinions and whatnot over there for you to listen to. And the Drive Back the Night is a show-specific show that you don't actually have to watch in order to appreciate, according to some listeners here. I'm seeing him nodding right now. Thank you, Mikey, for listening. I appreciate that. But yeah, you can find me over there on that stuff and interact with us.
Very nice. Well, as always, thank you guys for listening once more, and thank you for preparing yourselves for a plethora of hot takes and potentially unpopular opinions. We will see you later.